Nonprofit governance.
Nonprofit answers.
Nonprofit board.
Nonprofit management.
Nonprofit marketing.
Nonprofit resources.
Welcome to Nonprofit Everything, the podcast where hosts Andy Shurick and Stacy Wedding answer your questions about all things nonprofit.
Welcome to another episode of Nonprofit Everything. I'm Stacy Wedding, and I am here with my fabulous and brilliant co-host, Andy Shurick. How's it going, Andy?
I'm doing great, Stacy, because I got to talk to you today. That's like the best part of my day.
I know. We love it, even though we dread these. We dread the time chunk. It's a big block of time on our calendars when we do put these together, but we always get energized by hanging out together for a few hours by Zoom and doing the recordings. And all of that is made possible because of you. So as you tune into this episode, you are going to hear a lot of great questions we got. And I think people listen to our holiday wish. I think we said, hey, Santa, will you give us some more questions in 2024? And Santa delivered, and all of you delivered. So thank you for that. We just couldn't do this without your questions. And as a reminder, you can send in your questions. If you are spurred on to answer or ask a question after today's episode, just find us at nonprofiteverything.com. There's the big button on the homepage. It says ask a question, or you can just email us questions@nonprofiteverything.com, and we will make sure to answer it in one of the upcoming episodes. And with that, enjoy today's episode. I am an ED of a mid-sized nonprofit. One of our board members recommended to me that I consider offering flexible PTO to staff. Do you know what the pros and cons of this might be? And how do we word our handbook to make sure employees will use PTO instead of overworking themselves? I'm also wondering if there is a way to track PTO use to monitor underutilization as well as potential abuse.
I've always found the concept of like sick time and vacation time to be super arbitrary, right? Because it always seems to me like you've got these two buckets and you're relying on the employee to decide which of the two buckets they want to take from. And the employees that are going to be the problems are not necessarily the ones that are abusing it or using all the hours, because you set them, you know, you say you've only got this many and you're done. The employees you have to worry about are the ones that come to work sick. And I think if we didn't learn that from the last 4 years, I don't think we've learned anything.
Yeah.
It's like, if you don't feel well and you're not going to be your best, just stay home. Right. And I think I had in one of my really early like jobs a million years ago, I was working mall retail. And one of the things that they said was like, if you don't feel 100%, if you're just not into coming into work today, just call in. It's fine. We'll take care of it. It's not a big deal. And I always thought that was like a really interesting position to take. Like if you don't feel good, just don't come in. It's no big deal. Like it's no shade.
Right?
Nobody's going to feel less of you. It's just a job. Like if you're not going to be your best, like why waste everyone's time and stay home? And I always thought that was like an interesting starting point. And then when I got later on, you know, and you're in bigger organizations and they have these really complicated vacation programs and very complicated sick time, and you have to do certain things, I always felt really arbitrary and kind of not very friendly to me. Like now I have to think about it. Like I know I've got a lot to do and I don't feel well, but if I don't go in, then I'm using up this scarce resource. And what if I really need it next time? I've just got a sniffle, you know, it's not a big deal, but you know, like how bad do I have to be to not come in? And it's much easier to just like make it like big deal, like get your work done. If you're not coming in, you're not coming in, just make sure you call us so that we can make sure that whatever you need to do gets covered. I don't know. I always feel like it should be way more loosey goosey than it is. What do you think?
Yeah, I agree with you. And yet it's interesting. I have a friend who works in an organization that has unlimited, right? The big selling point was we have unlimited PTO, so you can take time off whenever you want throughout the year. And I've really seen more of the downsides of it from her perspective, because if you have too much work and expectations piled on your plate about what you're going to get done and what you're going to deliver, the reality is you can't take off whenever you want, right? And so there's these, like, there's this kind of double standard, I think, that can exist with it, making it sound like the employer is the hero when the employer is probably just trying to get away from like accrued PTO that they have to pay out, right? I mean, that's sort of the, I feel like sometimes these policies can be very pro-employer and not employees. So unless they're really done well and thoughtfully, I kind of cringe at them a little bit. And there's a lot of research. I mean, I am not the guru in this, but I've read some articles that say like this, the idea of like unlimited PTO or flexible PTO, it's not shown it necessarily actually supports people taking time off because people are based in their patterns. And if they still have a culture or a boss that never takes time off, that kind of leads to the culture that it's not okay to take time off, they won't do it either. And if their work demands are so high, they still won't do it. So to me, it feels like, kind of to your point, Andy, a larger issue of how do we have some sort of tracking or supervisors that care enough or bosses that care enough that say, hey, we're midway through the year, you haven't used any time. Like, what are you going to do? Like, you got to, like, this is good. Like, that encourages it and tries to create an environment where it's safe to do that. I feel like that's the larger issue that I would love. In an ideal world, I'd love to see it. I don't know. Does something exist like that? I'm not so sure.
Yeah. I mean, you're sort of stuck. And I know we talk about the agency problem all the time. Like, agency theory falls, like, rolls into nonprofit work all the time. And for those of you that haven't heard us harp on this 150,000 times, it's like, you need to have some supervisors need to have some method of controlling the people that work for them. There has to be some levers you can pull that can make people do things differently. You have to have some control. And one of them really is salary, right? You pay somebody some money and they show up, and theoretically, if you don't like them, you can fire them. The other one is like managing these benefits and making it so that the employee feels like they're not doing it because it's their job and they're getting paid to do it. They're doing it because they actually like the work and they like the organization and they feel like they want to do their best. And those are the employees, like, to your point, those are the employees you kind of need to worry about not taking PTO, because they're the ones that are going to show up regardless of whether or not they have extra hours. And, you know, they get to the end of the year and they're like, oh, I haven't taken any vacation. Like, and you don't know what's going on in the rest of their life. It might not be possible for them to take any other vacation just because other things are happening. You just like, what am I going to go out of town? I'm just going to stay home. That sounds really boring. I'd rather just go in. So like figuring out the system that works in your specific organization is going to be very different from everybody else. It's one of those, if you've got lots, you know, if you're running a McDonald's and you need people to be making food and running the register, I mean, those people have to be there. You can't just be like, oh, it's just closed today. It's no big deal, right? If you're running an organization where it's no big deal, if like the, as long as the phone gets answered, like at least that's fine. And we don't even need to do that anymore. As long as like somebody's answering emails as they come in, you don't need that physical presence. If people get work done at night, as long as you're not sending emails to clients at 3 o'clock in the morning, you know, that's probably fine. So I don't think there's any reason to not be flexible, but you have to make it make sense within your organization. So it's like, when you come back to sort of what the question is asking is like, are we worried about underutilization? Are we worried about what we should put in the handbook and what the rules should be? I mean, my opinion is it needs to be just totally organic. You need to say, so what are the people we have? What kinds of things do they need to perform well? And then how do we support them with a policy that makes sense for everybody? And not just say like what most people do is we've just copied the handbook from whatever, some other organization. We're using their handbook. These were the rules that were in their handbook. Or I've got an old one from an old job, so let's just drag that in and just copy that. And then we'll just make the rules what the rules are, right? I think you can be more flexible than that for sure. And it's going to make everybody happier.
And I think some rules aren't a bad idea, but to your point, within the context of the organization, because I could see where this could become an issue if, as an example, you had several key staff that you needed at least one of them there on a given day, and they all said, hey, I'm taking PTO. I got this flex PTO policy, taking PTO for this week. You're kind of screwed then. So to me, it feels like there's got to be some parameters. I mean, I think some of the policies I've seen people use has, you know, they've had things like, you know, on the first year on the job, you sort of, it's your testing ground before you get this PTO flex. So you've got 12 days or whatever on the first year. Like, so that for that organization, they felt like someone needed to kind of prove their weight or worth before they did that, which is an interesting, I'm not saying that's right or wrong. It's just kind of interesting. And I wonder what sort of thought went through with that. And then, you know, other thing, like, we're never going to have more than this percent or this number of staff on vacation at the same time. I mean, so you've got to think through some of those things just to make sure your organization can function. But to your point, you also don't want, you know, something that kind of feels like it's birthed of flexibility and employee choice doesn't feel like that marries well with a list of here's 100 rules of how you can use, right, flex PTO. That feels a little like contradictory. So what does this look like? Yeah.
I mean, you're right. Like, if everybody wants the week between Christmas and New Year's off, and you need to have the office open between Christmas and New Year's, there's got to be some way to determine who gets that, right? But that's in my world, that's more of a conversation than it is like a system. Like, it's like, well, okay, so tell you what, they asked like 3 months ago and we said yes, but you've worked here for 4 months longer than they've worked. So do I tell them no now? Or do we have to wait for you to decide what you're going to do before I can tell them that it's okay? Are we going to poll the office and say, who's going to be here and who's not being here so that we can have a lottery and then, you know, draw lots about who's going to have to stay? I mean, it's just positions you don't want to be in, which is why those weird, like super arcane red tape systems get built up to begin with, is because we had this thing and it made us uncomfortable. And so we figured, because I don't want to be the person that's going to be the bad guy to say, no, you can't go, like, instead we'll put it in the handbook. And that way we can point at the handbook and go, oh yeah, I know it's terrible, but the handbook says, right? Then it's not my fault that you can't go on vacation. It's the handbook's fault, right? But it's really your fault. So, you know, I know what I'm saying is, like, it feels super loosey-goosey, right? It's like, no one's ever going to go with the just laissez-faire, do what you want policy. But I think that's where you should start, and then make it make sense for people, right? Make it make sense for your staff so that they can actually be happy with the way it works and not be grumpy all the time because they want to go on vacation or they can't, or they never really feel like going on vacation. And so this is a benefit that everybody gets that they don't get, right? You just sort of need to look at it holistically with your, like, how does my company culture what do we want to be like? Do we want to be McDonald's, or do we want to be someplace people like coming to work? No shade on McDonald's specifically, but.
Yeah. And I'm wondering if we have any HR experts that are listening to this. I'd be wildly curious to know what they would say about this. It may be very different than you and I, Andy, but I love your idea though about not, I think things like this turn into, it's very easy to just say, what is someone else's policy? Let's just adopt it. What does someone else's handbook say? Let's just adopt it. Instead of actually doing the thought about your own culture, the own work you need, your own needs, like, what times you really need like a heavy lift, what times are there slower times? I know that people probably are laughing, listening to this going, I work in nonprofit. There's no slow time, but you know, the reality is just, it feels like it needs to be a bit more customized to your organization and really getting super clear on what is the desired outcome. Was this born out of the fact that people aren't taking time off or morale is down or burnout is high from staff? So if it's something like that, then figuring out, okay, that's probably a larger issue than just a PTO policy.
Okay, Stacy, our marketing team wants to start selling t-shirts, hats, and stickers from our website. Is this a good idea? Could we consider what we're given a donation?
Well, I think I'll take part one of the question and you take part two, Andy. How does that
sound? Fair enough.
I'm sticking you with the not as fun part of it, right? Or at least in my mind, not as fun.
I think the part's just as fun.
Do you? All right. I guess it all depends on our perspective. So, you know, I questions like these I probably drive people nuts because I just want to say this as a caveat, because I just want to ask more questions, right? Because I am curious. I find it challenging. I'm just going to own this from the outset. I find it challenging to answer a question without knowing more about the organization, its larger fundraising or marketing plan and strategy, it's how this fits in, what type of organization, because I think all of those things could influence whether this makes sense or not. So I think I would answer it probably with, has the marketing team who came up with this, right? Like, first of all, what is the reason for this? Is it to, because I've seen things where people get into doing logoed merchandise or t-shirts or hats or whatever it is. And it's because they're actually, maybe they're an advocacy organization and they're actually trying to get people to think about it, like, let's put this issue forward, remind people, like, and so it's much more like an advocacy goal versus other organizations that are doing it because they're like, I want to diversify my revenue streams. And so I feel like understanding that from the outset in my mind is important, and that there has to be an understanding of that. And I think with any kind of products, because let's be honest, people go there all the time. Oh, we're so cool and we're in love with ourselves. And so let's create t-shirts and let's create all this stuff. Right. But, you know, I think thinking about it, products, you know, are those, you know, sort of the best selling, I think, are those that have a connection to the mission and there's something unique about it that reminds customers of your organization, those that like it. So you see a lot of groups that are animal groups that do great with these kinds of things, right? Because animal lovers, I mean, I'm wearing a t-shirt now that's an animal loving dog, loving something about chihuahuas and loving chihuahuas, right? Like, so, but the point is like, so I think there's certain organizations, you know, environmental organizations, things that tend to, you see people more naturally inclined to want to like wear that and wear it proudly. But I think there's also some really, this is where I get a little bit of buzzkill with this kind of stuff. Cause I go, so is this every time we take on a new activity, whatever it is, right? In this case, selling products or like thinking about all the parts that go into that, because it sometimes sounds easier. And I know that there's third party providers and folks you can get that can actually design, distribute, ship your products. But all that has to be taken in consideration, right? Like, how do you find these groups? How do you know which ones are the ones you want to work with? What's the cost going to be to work with that group? What's your internal cost? What's the marketing? So I just always get stuck on thinking about what's the cost benefit analysis, right? If the goal is profit and to make some money off this, like, it, you know, what goods and what needs to be taken into consideration, right? From the design to, you know, the shipping to the delivery to the marketing, all of that needs to take place. So for me, I think I would say if your marketing team has done all that analysis and it fits in strategically with where you're headed and why it makes sense, then sure, it's probably something worth trying or looking at. But to do it without, I think sometimes it's easy to just come up with these ideas without doing some of the homework or research. And that's the part that makes me nervous about it. So I don't know if that makes me a Grinch or what, but that's kind of where I fall. Am I starting to channel you, Andy? Did that sound like
you're
an
starting
Andy?
To sound a lot like me?
Oh,
that
my
sounds
God.
A lot like something I would say. So in my previous CFO role, I was known as Dr. No. They called me Dr. No because people would come into my office and they'd come up with this great idea of this thing that they wanted to do. And I would start asking them really annoying questions, like all of the things that Stacey just said, like, who's going to take care of this? Who's going to be responsible for counting the t-shirts at the end of the night? Who is going to decide how much they cost? Who's going to take the money? What employee is going to be responsible for, like, cashing the checks for when you take them to volunteer events and you want to get rid of them at volunteer events? And why do you know that there's a market for this? And are you willing to eat it from your budget when you order all this stuff and nobody can get rid of it? Like all these really annoying questions. And you could just see people's eyes. They just roll back in their heads and they'd be like, oh, why are you asking me so many questions? I just had this great idea and you just came in like pooped all over it. This is not what I wanted to hear from you today, right? But honestly, walking into my office with a half an idea is that's not going to go well anyway. I'm going to be polite to you, but I'm like, my job is to make sure we don't do dumb things. That's part of the job description. So yeah, we said no to that a lot.
Did
a
you?
Lot of things got said no to.
Doctor yeah. No, and I feel like we need to get you a t-shirt that says that. Or speaking
See,
of t-shirts.
But no one would buy it, right? I wouldn't wear it. Exactly. So to this day, I think there's one idea that somebody brought in. Okay, here's another thing. The part of the executive team came up with this great idea. They wanted to go into this. I'm not even going to say it specifically because I'm going to hurt people's feelings, but they came up with a really good idea and they asked me to do a business plan. And which is, I think, was a smart way to do it, because then they engaged me in the process of saying, like, we think this is a good idea, but could you help us pencil it out and figure out all the things we need to know before we jump into it? So long story short, they had decided to do it regardless of what I had done, right? And so I put this thing together and it was fun, right? I put it together, came up with this big plan of like, this is how it's going to go. And there was a section in it that was like the risk section. And the risk section, one of the things in the risk section was, we are entering a market that somebody else is already pretty much in and they've not been paying attention to it. So if they see us pop up and then they notice that we're doing this, they may put the hammer down and knock us out of business immediately because they have scope, scale. They're also much better equipped to make things move faster than we are. So like, we could get crushed if they just, it's like the eye of Sauron, right? If it points at you, you're done. So that was a big piece of the plan, right? And then, they looked at it. They're like, great, Andy thinks it's fine. No, they maybe read that section, maybe not. Put it into place. I left. And within 6 months of me leaving, exactly that thing happened. That organization noticed what we were doing and said, oh, we want to be in that business. That looks really lucrative. They pivoted to it and just knocked us straight out of the market. Like there was no coming back. And like later on, I'm talking to somebody about it and they're like, we were really surprised. I'm like, were you really surprised? Like, did you look at page 17 of the thing I gave you? And then they read it. They're like, oh my God, you said that exact thing. Like, of course I said that exact thing and you chose not to read it, right? So it's like one of those things, like, you good idea for bringing me in. Like, I'm sorry that you didn't read the whole thing and you were just using it as an exercise and like trying to keep me happy. But that wasn't my job. My job wasn't to be happy. My job was to say, here's what's going to go. This is what's going to happen. And that's why you've got me hired. There is one thing that a staff member brought up that was a really good idea that from now, I still think it could have worked. Like I said, no, at the time, because it just felt complicated and I didn't think we had the staff to like really do it well, but it could have been a really good idea. I sort of kicked myself about that one. But for the most part, everything anybody brought, it was either like obviously a good idea or I'm going to say no because we've got a mission. Like we've got, there's important things we're supposed to be doing. And like, at the food bank, have we solved hunger? Not yet. So let's work on that. Let's continue to go down that path. And all these other things you're talking to me about, once we've solved hunger, let's talk about t-shirts. We're totally going to go into the t-shirt market, but not yet, because that's not where our focus should be. And it's going to take attention away from the things we should be focusing on and not like this new thing that just happens to be shiny. I lost that battle sometimes. I won it sometimes. I lost it sometimes. But that's how it goes. You can't win them all. I don't know. I still think it's an interesting thing to think about. I think from a sustainability perspective, when you look at a nonprofit in general, like raising money from donors is really the best way to get it. Try to find individual donors, but it's really hard work. And there's a lot that goes into it. And it's not an instant on. It's not like you turn the faucet on and the money comes out. You have to like spend a lot of time building up these relationships. And that's like a lot of times we're just not patient enough for that. Like the problem is now. The problem is not 5 years from now. And if the donors would just listen, they would just give us the money now, right? And so there's a need, an internal need to figure out ways, other ways to come up with money. And I don't think that's a bad thing. I think that's a really good thing is to say, like, how can we diversify the money coming in and is coming up with exchange transaction ideas a good idea? And it's not necessarily a bad idea. Not 100% of exchange transaction ideas are bad, but you're always at a disadvantage. Number one, because you're a nonprofit, there are different rules. and it's actually worse for you. So if you had, so say you had a great t-shirt idea and you just decided to start a regular old LLC and just sold t-shirts, like it would be 1,000 times easier for you to do that than it would be to add a t-shirt program, even if it's the exact same idea, onto the top of a nonprofit. And the reason is that in the 19-teens, the IRS decided that, actually Congress decided that nonprofits had an unfair advantage over for-profits when it comes to doing commerce things. And so anytime a nonprofit goes into any kind of commercial space, they are taxed twice, two times. So if you're an LLC, you're taxed once. If you're a nonprofit, you get taxed twice because they don't want nonprofits competing against for-profits. And it's been like that forever. It's been like that. It's how the tax code was written. And it's just assumed. Everybody says, that's fine. We're okay with that. Nonprofits have an unfair advantage, when in reality, for-profits have an unfair advantage because they can raise money just by selling stock, which is imaginary. And we actually have to do some work for it. We have to convince somebody to give us money for nothing in exchange. We can't give them any profit back. It's never going to be an investment other than to make the world a better place, which is sometimes a harder sell. So long story short, it's an uphill battle. So you really need a fantastic idea for some of these exchange transaction ideas to work. And something with a little bit of attention that somebody thought maybe is a good idea is probably not high enough. It's not going to reach the bar of being a really good idea.
I think this is back to what we oftentimes talk about, that it's easy in the sector to look at somebody else or another organization. You go, oh, they have all that cool swag. Well, we should have it too. It's so easy to fall into that trap without doing some of this. And you have no clue. Are they regretting that decision? Are they even making any money on that decision? Is that even helping them? Or is it a big suck of time, energy, and money, right? Like, you have no clue. And so I do think, and I think asking yourself some really key questions before embarking on stuff like this, do we have enough brand awareness to generate sales, right, for something like this? Do we run the risk of donors thinking that by purchasing t-shirts, they don't have to donate? And how do we solve for that? Or how do we like move people on a continuum when it's one mentality of exchange mentality, like you said, like I'm purchasing something and getting something, and now I'm going to move them into donor mode because it feels good and they're helping solve a larger issue. Not always the same kind of mindset or target audience. So I do think there's some of those key questions, thinking about everything from do you have the resources, but some of those other key questions to really take a stab. And all this stuff is like, I go, you get what you put into it. So if you're going to do this, if you've done the analysis, if you've done the research, and you then do it, and do it well, right? Because it's also, again, that same thing you would say for a donor experience. You want the donor, every interaction, to be a positive one with your organization. The same goes with product. So I have now just bought a product. Oh, but you didn't ship it to me on time, or whatever. Fill in the blank complaint, right? So then starts to impact that brand you're so much trying to uphold and further. So thinking about, how do you do this high quality with excellence like you do everything else? And I feel like all of those go into play. So I'm curious though, Andy, like, because I know one of the part of the question was like the donation and the exchange transit, sort of what is the, is there a donative element to this? So can you speak to that a little bit?
Yeah. So the typical example of the something being considered a donation is called the token exemption. And you're most familiar with it with, like, when used to be when you'd give to public radio or public television, they'd send you a tote bag, right? So, or they'd send you some thing that had no value. There's actually specific rules about how big the donation can be, and then how much the cost, the value of the thing that you're giving in exchange, because the IRS really doesn't care about you as a nonprofit, about what works for you. What they want to make sure is that they've closed all of the loopholes that they've found that prevent people from taking a tax break when they don't deserve one. So a potential tax break would be you give me a donation of $100 and I give you $100 worth of something, right? So you're taking the tax break, but you're actually getting something in exchange from me. So they've made it hilariously low. So the rule right now, and this changes all the time. So the rule as of the beginning of 2024 is the fair market value of what you, the donor, receives in exchange can't exceed the lesser of 2% of the donor's payment or $125. And the donor's payment has to be at least $62.50. And the item cannot have a value of more than $12.50. So when you do all that math together and you figure out, okay, we've got $125, 2%, $12.50. Basically, it means that if someone buys a t-shirt from you, they would have to pay $62.50 for the t-shirt, and you'd have the cost of the t-shirt. Actually, sorry, the fair market value of the t-shirt could only be $1.25. So basically, if you're going to sell something and call it a donation, the fair market value of the thing you're selling has to be $1.25 or less. So nothing. Like a keychain? I don't know. What's $1.25 now? Nothing. And nothing. They have to buy it from you from $62.50 or more. That's the difference between buying and selling.
Wow.
If you want to consider it a token return for a donation. So it's never going to work for t-shirts. It's never going to work for baseball hats or maybe jelly bracelets. If you can get somebody to buy a $62.50 jelly bracelet, that would work. But basically it's not going to work. So no, you can't use it as a donation.
I'm sorry. I'm just laughing at this. That's bizarre, right? That's bizarre.
It's so specific.
Nobody would be
too.
Selling anything.
It's really specific. Yeah. And so much of it is just the IRS, like, and the way Congress has decided these are the rules. Like, sorry, nonprofit, this is just not going to be a revenue stream for you. If you want to start a business, start a business. Don't do it through your nonprofit. Do something else. And then, I don't know, incorporate it as a B corporation and have all the money just get, you know, all the profits get paid back to the nonprofit, because then you don't have to deal with all the ridiculous rules that they add on top of nonprofits selling products.
So that raises the question from an unrelated business income tax. I'm assuming an organization would have to be doing, you may know those percentages off the top of your head. I don't, but like they'd be having a lot of sales, right? A lot of product sales to end up having UBIT. Is that correct or not so much?
No, not so much. So the rules about whether or not it becomes unrelated, basically it's called UBIT, which is unrelated business income tax. Sometimes you hear it as UBI, which is unrelated business income. And so for something to be unrelated business income, it needs to be regularly conducted. It needs to be regularly conducted, and it also needs to sort of be kind of not related to your current mission. So if you're a performing arts center and you're doing performances and you're a nonprofit, like, because performing arts performances are clearly part of your mission, that's not unrelated business income. But if you're selling t-shirts and you're not a nonprofit whose mission is to make sure people's torsos are covered, like, that's probably unrelated business income for you. So anything that's unrelated business income is taxable and regularly conducted. So if it's on your website, if you're selling them from your website, that means you're selling them on nonstop 24/7, right? That is regularly conducted. Regularly conducted also means we do it every year at our winter gala. So if we sell something at our winter gala every year, that's regularly, even though it's once a year, it's still regularly conducted. So if it's a flea market, like we're just getting rid of some junk and we're going to sell the junk, that might not be regularly conducted if you don't do it annually or do it every year. So there's nothing bad about unrelated business income. Like, I know people freak out about it and they try to avoid it when they can, but it's just, if it's another way to raise money and it isn't a drag on other resources and it's going to work out for you, sure, go ahead and do it. It's just another line on your 990. It's not going to kill anybody. And you have to pay a little bit of tax on your revenue. And just like any other time you're paying tax, the reason you're paying tax is because you're making money. It's okay to pay tax if you're making money. It's not something to be avoided. Thanks for joining us today. Stacey and I really appreciate that you've taken the time to listen to the podcast, to take a half an hour out of your day once every couple of weeks to listen to us geek out about weird nonprofit scenarios. Keep those questions coming. That's how the podcast works. If you don't send us questions, we start talking about pets and kids, and that's not a threat. That's a promise. We don't want that. So keep the nonprofit questions coming so we can continue the podcast in a more thematic way. Be sure to share this with folks if you thought this was interesting, or you want to secretly tell your board member to listen to what Stacey said about this because you should be doing it this way. Maybe you could share the podcast anonymously. Heck, send it to us and we'll share it with them. We'll see if that works. Also, we're on social channels as well as Discord. If you've got a question, that's one way to get it to us. Otherwise, questions at nonprofiteverything.com or nonprofiteverything.com, the webpage with all the show notes. There's a big question, ask a question button there. You can ask questions there. Also, be sure to rate us if you thought this was interesting. Even if you didn't, we read them all. If you've got constructive feedback and you don't want to send it directly to us, post it up on one of those ratings things and we read them all. That's an invitation, to be honest. We'd like you to be honest with us because we want this to be good for everybody. And with that, thanks. We will see you in 2 weeks.